Welcome everyone to another episode of Live Chat with Viv and Bill. We thank you and appreciate you for being a part of our show for this long. This is our 41st show. We did not give credit to our 40th show, so we've taken the time to say thank you for joining us every week. We say thank you that from May of last year, Bill, I think we've been going strong. So we appreciate you and we thank you for joining us. However, today's show, we are talking about something that's been on the media for a long, long time, and that's, yes, vaccination. Some people don't like that word, but it's something that we feel that because we are Live Chat, we have to discuss the things that surround our lives, our daily lives, and the things that's on our hearts, and the things that's in the forefront of the media, and the things that we're thinking about, especially COVID-19. So, Vilma, if you want to introduce your guest, and we go forward.
Okay, thank you, my co-host, Vivilyn. It's so nice to be with you at least once a week so we can do this show. And I am excited because our guest this evening is somebody who I have worked with, very talented in what she does, and her name is Monica Harmon, and I'm going to have her introduce herself to our audience and just tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for that warm welcome. And I must say congratulations on your 41st episode of your podcast. That is an amazing accomplishment. My name is Monica Harmon, and I'm a public health nurse, and I'm an educator and a researcher as well. And so some of the things that I do, I am a proud member of the National Black Nurses Association, where I serve as the chapter president for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Area Black Nurses Association. And I also serve as the co-chair for the Nurse Diversity Council of the Pennsylvania Action Coalition. Some of my activities definitely centers around health promotion and disease prevention. And I think one of the activities that probably is closest to what our topic is today is that I do serve as a consultant for the National Nurse-Led Centers Consortium, where I consult on this topic, and that is vaccine confidence.
Good. Wow. So you see, my audience, I wasn't lying. You've got the best. So let's hear what she has to say to us today. Now, you know, it's in the news. You can't help but hear it, and you're a part of it. So let's tell our audience the importance of vaccines in general, and then we will speak specific to the COVID-19 vaccine.
Sure. So I think in a nutshell, what vaccines do is that once they're introduced into the body, the body recognizes them as foreign, and the body says, okay, we need to attack. And so what this does is help your body build up the troops so that if you do get infected by a virus, that your body will be able to fight it.
Very good. Very good. Tell us a little bit about this new vaccine, Andy, that we have that everybody is going after and people like me still haven't been able to receive it. I don't know about you, Vivilyn. Did you get yours?
No, I just wanted her to talk about all three of the vaccine because some people might not aware that there's three different types. So, sure. You know, I think, you know, let's talk about what they are and go forward with that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Before you go on, did you get your vaccine, Vivilyn?
No.
Okay.
She was not going to let that question go.
Yes. Monica, give us some information about these vaccines.
Sure. So there's three different vaccines that have been pushed through the market. And that is the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and the Johnson & Johnson. The Pfizer and the Moderna, of course, were the first to be approved. And the difference is both are I hate to say the word shot because for some communities, shot is a negative term, but there are two injections that you must get 4 to 6 weeks apart. And the difference is the Pfizer has to be refrigerated at lower temperatures, whereas the Moderna you can refrigerate at a normal refrigerator temperature. The Johnson & Johnson, which was just hot off the presses recently approved, is a one injection vaccine and also can be refrigerated in your normal refrigerator.
Okay. Is one better than the other?
So you have to look at confidence, if you will, the percentage of people that didn't have any issues. So I understand that the Pfizer and the Moderna have about a 95, 96% of confidence, if you will. And the Johnson & Johnson is slightly lower at about 85, 86%. Mm-hmm. Of course, if for the Pfizer and the Moderna, if you don't get the second dose within the recommended amount of time, of course, that does go down a little bit to about 65%.
Sure.
So you do need to get both. If you get Pfizer or Moderna, you need to get both. You can't switch around.
So what if you get the Moderna and then you decide, I'm not going to get the second one. I'm going to go get Johnson & Johnson, or I'm going to go get Pfizer. Can you repeat your advice again?
Sure. So it's not recommended that if you start with Moderna, you need to finish with Moderna. If you start with Pfizer, you need to finish with Pfizer. I think that's why many people were excited about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, because it is the one vaccination, particularly when you talk about certain communities that cannot take a day off from work. Right. If you have some side effects from the vaccination, they can't take another day off of work to recover. Right. So if we can do one vaccination in the arm, one dose in the arm, it's much better for some of those communities.
Is there any side effects to those vaccinations?
There are. And that's just with any vaccination. So certainly soreness at the injection site. Which is usually in the deltoid or this kind of top muscles of the arms. I always tell people that make sure that you get the injection in the non-dominant side. So meaning the side that you do not use the most or you do not write with, because the soreness can be just that. The other piece is what some people may feel are some chills. They may have some fatigue, you know, afterward. And then we've also seen some people who have gotten the full onslaught of the COVID symptoms right after.
Mm-hmm. Is it the same for all three vaccines?
It is the same for all three. It just depends on how your body reacts. So, for instance, I did have the Moderna, and I'll probably share with your audience, I am vaccine hesitant. Right. So not that I have not had vaccines, because I have, certainly for the line of work that I am in, I have to get the flu vaccine every year. But so when I looked at the COVID vaccine, I was very hesitant, partly because it did seem like it went through production rather quickly. Also, again, I just had questions about who was on the team, who developed the vaccine, you know. But I also knew that it would get to the point, and I do believe it will happen, that as healthcare workers, we will probably be mandated at some point. It's not set in stone yet, but I feel it's coming. When I looked at the research, what I found was that the team that developed the vaccines were more diverse than any team that developed vaccines before. And also the population in the clinical trials were also more diverse, which meant that not only was it someone that looked like me on the team that probably would ask the questions that I would ask, but there were also people in the trials that looked like me as well.
And that's right? All three also.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So that was your determining factor to say... Okay, I think
that was my determining factor. And, you know, and it was having those conversations, I think, both with my family, my community members, You know, because when you're a nurse, everyone comes to you like, give me the real of what this doctor told me. And I'm like, well, didn't you ask your doctor or your healthcare provider? Why are you asking me? And they say, because I'm asking you. I knew you would be able to help me figure this out. And so I had to be very clear, you know, also about why I decided to take it. The other piece is that because of the line of work that I'm in, I do have a much higher risk than the general population of contracting COVID. And my understanding about how vaccines work in the body, that even if you do contract the disease, is not as bad as if you did not have
the vaccine.
Vaccine in the first place. Because the body recognizes, okay, this is foreign. We need to attack it before it invades the whole body.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you're straight up with that, because I know a lot of our audience is, that's one of the things they have, like, okay, I'm not taking this vaccination. I'm not really sure, especially what you said about it being pushed so quickly. And, you know, people of color, we're concerned about this vaccine and the effects and the out, the further, the ramification of taking it now, what's going to happen later to our race and our society, because that's one of the concerns that a lot of people have out there. So I'm glad that you're very open and frank that this was basically also one of your concerns.
And the other thing is too, because I've heard that a lot, thank you. I heard a lot about this vaccine was developed quickly. And I think I just want to dispel, you know, first that we've had coronaviruses with us since the 1970s. So this isn't new, right? It's COVID-19 because that's the first time they saw this virus. This strain of the virus is in 2019, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The other piece is that the development of vaccines is also not new. They just used the science and, you know, and applied it to this virus.
You know something, Monica, that was one of my concerns with regards to the rapid pace in which this vaccine developed. However, there was an article that I read, and I cannot remember the name of the scientist, but he had gone almost 50, 60% of the way in coming up with this vaccine. But when he presented it to the companies, they did not want to subsidize the vaccine, because I think they were at the time they were looking at another vaccine,
and Ebola,
right, mm-hmm. the Ebola. So at the time when this came through, it's like saying, oh, by the way, let's go back to what this person had submitted before. So it's not that it was as quickly as they made it out to look, mm-hmm. because there was a lot of study that went into it, but they just, you know, like started where this gentleman had left off with him. Did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if that will put some people's mind at ease,
right.
It's not as quickly as it appears. It's something right. that was done, but was on the back burner because that was not the primary intent when initially. So it's not that quickly.
And the other thing is people don't understand is how the FDA works. So the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has a number of I forget how they describe it, but they're, I almost want to say think tanks, but that's not the proper name. Advisory panels, that's it. They have advisory panels. So there is an advisory panel on vaccines. And what happens is there are a group of experts. So usually someone that has been on the team to patent a drug. There's also doctors who work in that field. And then they also have a consumer representative. They have a representative, and then they also have a patient representative on those panels. And they actually look at all of the data, articles and research, and then they ask questions. The FDA will ask questions. How should they proceed with this, whether it's a drug or it's a medical device? as well. And so that, you know, that's the other piece that I want people to think about. It is a rigorous process. And you're talking about these panels when they meet, it's 2 to 3 days all day. And you are sequestered as well. And I'm speaking from experience, having served on those panels before as a consumer representative.
And that's interesting that you said too. You said it's been out from the 70s?
Right. I believe it's the virus, coronaviruses.
Not the vaccine.
Yeah, right. I know. I know not the vaccine. I'm just trying that she was saying, to be clarified, that she really said 1970.
So yeah, I believe it's 1978. So it's a part of those SARS virus. It's a whole family. So remember we talked about SARS, you know, like the late 2010s, right? Same family.
Okay.
Interesting.
Right. So do you guys know the gentleman's name, just in case you're going to, Vilma, you're going to find that?
I'll try to go back and find the article that I read. I can look back and find it. But it definitely is, and it's a legitimate article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And put it on our Facebook page because that would be great for our audience to read.
Okay.
That because I didn't know about that. I thought, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. it just came out like that. But like you said, this gentleman started this process and that wasn't the primary thing for them to talk about. So they mm-hmm. went on to Ebola instead of mm-hmm. Corona. So, okay.
I mean, think about it too. We've also been battling HIV and AIDS for decades as well. And so that's another question that I've gotten. Well, wait a minute, we've had HIV for so long. Why have we not gotten a vaccine for HIV yet?
I've heard that also.
Right. And
but you have to understand how viruses work.
Absolutely.
Get it.
And how does it work, really? Explain that.
How do I say it? The viruses are very smart, right? So they recognize what's going on and they can change and mutate. And they're like, oh, you're not going to get me with that vaccine. And so you have to be able to get a vaccine that can almost outsmart the virus. And we just haven't been able, science hasn't just been able to develop one yet for HIV. The other piece is when you look at treatment, you know, as well. So we do have to follow the money, right? So when you think about treatment for COVID, well, those drugs we've had out for years, the pharmaceutical companies have made their money. With our HIV drugs, we're still making new drugs and getting smarter with how people are able to live longer. And HIV is now a chronic condition.
Right. To go back a little bit, I usually like to clear up because our audience is so diverse. And when you mentioned the acronym SARS, what I remind people what it is, that it's severe acute respiratory syndrome. So it has to do with your respiratory system, which there were many that started out. And what our guest is saying, what Monica is saying, that COVID-19 is a part of, what did you say? It was a
coronavirus,
right?
But it is in part of the SARS family,
right?
Yeah. Of viruses. So right. There's MSARS, there's SARS, which MSARS you kind of see in the Middle East, Southeast Asia.
Yeah, thanks. Just to let them understand what SARS is.
Sure.
Thank you. My other question that I want to ask you, what is your role on the committee that you are now a part of that looks at vaccines? What's your role?
So my role, I'm the only nurse. So I think that my role is to bring some clarity to the information, to also help nurses be more confident in the information that they are giving to not only for themselves, but also that what they're giving to the populations that they work with. What we found, if you look at some of the studies, is that nurses have been a group that has been hesitant to get the vaccine. So there has not been 100% across the board. Nurses will do this. And a lot of it is confidence in the vaccine. But then also confidence in what they are educating their patients on. So we know that nurses are the most trusted professionals. Right? We're about 20 years in now with that designation. So part of that trust is because I think nurses, we think holistically, right? We want to make sure that we care for the entire patient. But the other piece is that how can we be sure about information we're given and we're not too sure ourselves as well. And so the work that I do is looking at nurses and looking at the confidence that they have in getting the vaccine themselves, but then also educating their patients and community members.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I have, this is twofold because number one, we're talking about the vaccine and being so much of your, all your accolades, we also celebrating Women History, you know, month. And I'm like, wow, you are really a woman that, you know, inspire and able to educate our audience on the things that's needed and a trailblazer type of thing that, you know, you have paved the way. You're able to be a representative of nurses and getting them more educated and informed that they can able to inform their patients much better. So you really are the real deal, right, Vilma?
Well, thank you. We try.
Yes, she is. She is. Did you have other questions on the vaccine, Vivian?
Yeah, you know, like I said before, the information that you've given us is really great. And I wanted to know, when you were saying this, I didn't want to interrupt, why did you choose to take the one that you took?
I think when I looked at the clinical trials and I looked at what was reported from the CDC and from other respected outlets. Mm-hmm. Just for me, the Moderna, I think, spoke more to me. It had less side effects. Okay. You know, even though all of them have the side effects, but I just felt like when you looked at the study population, when they did have the side effects, it was less than with Pfizer, for what I could see from the information that I had. And it could be refrigerated in a normal refrigerator.
Oh, okay.
That scared me, those deep temperatures. I'm like, that was the Pfizer. So I was like, no.
And then give us also the age group that's required now, because I know that they keep on fluctuating in regards to the age of what, who can get the vaccination. Because I know of a lady who was on our show, she's like 79, and she couldn't get the vaccine. I heard a lady in the supermarket, she was saying, oh, you know, I'm 75 and I've been waiting for this vaccine and I can't get it. And this is someone in Delaware. So I'm just like, you know, explain to us who can and who can't and how can they really actually go out and get the vaccine?
Well, it varies state to state as well. So, you know, I know that some states you have tiers. So certainly the first tier were healthcare providers and other frontline. And then the second tier or the second level of the first tier was then senior citizens as well. So, and they also included other frontline workers, essential workers as well. So those who work in the supermarkets, EMTs, police officers, parole officers, that kind of thing.
And they have to be within that age group to get it, or?
They have to be in the age group or they have to be in that class of worker to get it. And then you also have to make your appointment, which is another challenge. So I have been seeing some faith-based groups open up their houses of worship for mass vaccine clinics and communities. Certainly in Philadelphia, we have the Black Doctors Consortium who've been, I think, pulling Yeoman's work with the 24-hour marathons of giving COVID vaccines. The school district of Philadelphia has started, they have vaccinated all of their nurses, but then also have started to vaccinate the teachers in conjunction with Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So I think you're definitely, we have to, it's all hands on deck to get everyone vaccinated.
Now, I also heard the president was saying that by May, towards the end of May, that there will be vaccine available for anyone who wants it. So that means that now is you can just probably, what, show up by then? Or, you know, how quickly can somebody who is in their 50s or 40s or 30s can start going to their doctors and say, I don't know if you know the information for this, but can go to their doctors and say, hey, I want to be vaccinated, can get it?
So the doctor's offices don't have it. And I don't know when they will. It's really just been left to the states and the state health departments and trying to, you know, divvy out who will give out the vaccines that way. Some of the hospital systems, for example, you know, have them. And so they've been kind of contracting out to give vaccines to people.
Yeah. Just to clarify, I don't think it's a matter that the individuals like in their 70s cannot get the vaccine. It's the availability of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So you have very long waiting lists in so many places. Now that we have a third vaccine, I think the wait will be less. So it's not a matter of, it's just the waiting list and going through the waiting list, because you may hear about a place that is open up and you think you are quick to call and it's all filled up. So they don't have the volume. So they're not denying them the vaccine. They just do not have available vaccine. So they just have to wait.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of coordination that goes into that too, you know, giving the vaccines. Just not you, you know, because you have to not only make the appointment, there's paperwork, there's education that has to happen. Then you have to wait 15 to 30 minutes after you get the injection, right? Because they need to observe, they need to have a healthcare provider observe you to make sure you don't have any reactions, serious reactions to the vaccine.
Speak on that process.
And spacing.
Yeah, speak on that process, because that's important. I didn't know that either. So speak on the process of when you make the appointment, the day of the appointment, what actually happens.
So I know my experience has been I had to make the appointment, you stand in line, then you wait to be called because you have to space, you have to have spacing, social distancing, right? You sit down, you get all of the information, you ask a list of questions, you know, cold, have you had cold symptoms, fever, has anyone been sick, all these questions. Then they're asked, which arm would you like the injection in? You get your injection, then you have to kind of be corralled to another area, and again, you're waiting, and you're socially distanced, and then they're timing how long you're sitting down. So you have to wait that time. And then you leave, right? And then wonderful thing about the CDC, while you're waiting, I actually also participated that when I got the vaccine, that I would put my information in and they would actually text me and say, how are you doing today? And I completed that. And so I, you know, I had a series of that for a couple weeks. So that's also a way for us to get more data to say, okay, this is how many people have gotten it. These are the side effects that they've had. So I'm waiting to see what that data looks like as well.
It's about an hour process, 2 hours process?
I would say, well, see, and the other thing is they want you to come 10 minutes before your appointment time. So you can't come an hour early and say, well, let me just go ahead. No, it doesn't work that way. You have to come at your exact time, 10 minutes before, no more than 10 minutes. So you're looking at probably, I mean, it was a quick process. Don't get me wrong. It took me about 30 to 40 minutes. But I also had, I won't say I had the luxury, but, you know, I was able to take that time to ride and get the immunization. And I can tell you the first injection, after the first one, I just had fatigue the next day. And if anybody knows me, they know I'm high energy. So if I want to go to sleep, it's pretty bad. That's all I wanted to do. And then after the second injection, I didn't have any issues other than the soreness, which I expected in my arm. You know, now for other people I know, you know, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I've known of some too, that's not the case. But I'm glad you just said it, because that was my next question. I wasn't sure if you did say what effect it had on you or not. So I'm glad that you went into that.
Yeah, it's very difficult to pin down, you know, we have general reaction, but then because our body responds so differently to things that come at it, you know, I don't think you can specifically say this is what will happen, because I know people who did well, like yourself, Monica, and then I know others, like my daughter, who was in bed the next day from the second one that she got, because she, but after 24 hours, she was up and fine, but it just knocked her down. And one of the reasons that they give for this is sometimes it's the, you know, you start to build the immunity from the first one. And then with the second one that you get, you have a sort of a build-up effect or double effect or something that they were explaining. So you can't really tell any one person, you know, this is what is going to happen, you know, apart from the general redness and soreness and maybe a little tenderness, you know, at the injection site.
And what can they do if a person experiencing the redness and the tenderness, or they're being knocked out, like Vilma just said about her daughter? What can one do to alleviate those things?
So I tell people, and that's what I tell them with any kind of immunization you get, is that whatever pain reliever you use, use that. Okay. You know, if you feel those side effects, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're feeling fatigued, you need to rest. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, and we don't talk a lot about this, is just really that preventive care in the first place, right? So making sure we eat well, making sure we rest appropriately, 68 hours, you know, a day, making sure that you drink and, you know, your water and be hydrated, you know, just those general, you know, wellness things that we should do, mm-hmm. you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. So that if your body is attacked by a virus, that, you know, it has something to fight with.
Absolutely.
And this is my last question for you, basically. Okay. I know you have to go, because you have like back-to-back meetings.
Oh my God.
But this is my last question. Now, what would you say to those individuals that say, I'm not taking it, I don't trust it, I don't care what you say? What would you say to those individuals that, you know, have that thing like, you know, I hear so many things. I heard about they're using, you know, aborted baby cell. They're using a whole bunch of different things into this drug, and people just going on and on about so many different things concerning the reason why they think they shouldn't take it. So I'm just saying, you know, throwing it out there to you, how can you encourage those individuals that says, I don't trust this, this might be the antichrist, or whatever the excuses that they have? What would you say to those individuals?
I think, you know, I always tell people, do what makes you most comfortable, right? Because you do have a choice. But make sure you get all the proper information. You know, don't believe the hype. Read for yourself. You know, get as much knowledge as you can and be comfortable with the decision. I can tell you, I've met many healthcare workers that said, I read all the data, I know I can make the appointment, I'm not getting it. Mm-hmm. And I also know lay people that say the same thing. I have a cousin that she and I love her, but we argue about this. And I just say, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. But I also caution people that if you really knew what COVID looked like, when these hospitals and, you know, just the after effects, even if you survive COVID, if somebody gave you an option that says, this is just another layer to help you fight it, why would you not take it? Why would you not be a good citizen, right? Because I wouldn't want anyone to get COVID. When you take care of COVID patients, you understand that, mm-hmm. right? And think about the funerals that we've had, and people really cannot grieve their loved ones. You should be able to grieve your loved one, mm-hmm. right? The other piece is, and if you don't get the vaccine, Just because you get the vaccine doesn't mean you can't get coronavirus. However, it lessens the effect if you do. Mm-hmm. But the other piece is still, please wear your mask. Please wash your hands And if soap and water is not available, use hand sanitizer. And also just keep social distancing. And, you know, remember that, you know, it's wonderful for us to get together for holidays. I love that. I love a house full of people, but I don't want to get together for funerals.
Right. Well said. And just to piggyback on what you said, Monica, a number of people asked me that same question, and my answer is similar to yours. I give them the facts.
Yep.
The decision is theirs. You and, you know, I cannot tell you or force you to do it, but I give you the facts, I give you the pros, I give you the cons, and then I am not going to make that decision for you. You have to be comfortable, because you have people out there that are definitely anti-vaxxers. They do not believe in vaccine, and it's not just COVID-19. I have had a lot of pushback when it comes to giving the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
Right.
Because of, you know, people who are anti-vaccine, who push wrong information out there. And then you have those who believe it. And, you know, and for us, other reasons, they are not going to do it, even if they see that the benefits are there. The other thing that I try to tell people is that if it was not for vaccines, I don't know what would happen to a number of people. Because of vaccines, we don't see measles, mumps, rubella in high, you know, concentration in the community. We don't see polio. Polio is eradicated. TB. You know, TB has decreased tremendously. I couldn't tell the last day, you know, that we use those negative air rooms to put, you know, patients with tuberculosis. You know, and I have seen what it does to people who are not vaccinated, and if they got the vaccine, it would have been different. And the other pushback I get a lot is with the flu vaccine, including my husband. He got the flu vaccine once, and he got sick.
Right. I've gotten sick once with the flu.
And he said, I would never, ever take this flu vaccine again. And guess what? I have to take it every year, whether I wanted it or not. I had no choice.
Right.
And I never said to him, you got to take the vaccine. I just come home and I will say, boy, I can't believe we lost this patient today because of flu. Mm. A simple thing as influenza. And it does happen because they can get very sick. But I never force him to get the vaccine, you know, but he knows, and he doesn't tell me not to get it. So again, it's a mindset,
right?
Know? And I know there are Christians like myself out there who say, you know, God takes care of me. And yes, he does.
Amen.
But God takes care of you, by putting information out there as well, by giving knowledge to people like Sandy, to do the things they do. And I'm not saying you go out there and do everything, but do not do preventive care. And then when you get sick, you said, well, oh God, I need a miracle. You know?
Right. You had the miracle. You refused it. It didn't come in the way you wanted it to come.
Exactly.
I'm laughing. She said she don't push them, but she said, oh, we lost that client today. Give him a guilt trip.
It's real.
And speaking to your what you said, Rivelin, about the tissue, aborted tissue, that is not true.
Yeah, it's not true.
That's an anti-vax propaganda.
And that's unethical. Right. Yes. So there's standards of ethics that you must abide by when you're developing vaccines.
That was just what I've heard.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. I've heard it too.
Yeah. I've heard it too. And the person who shared the information with me, and I said, please do not send me anything like this again. This is propaganda. And I am a healthcare worker. I don't believe in it. And they haven't sent me anything again. But not only with vaccines, what people need to understand, but it's also with any studies or any research that is going to be done, there is a standard which stemmed from the Tuskegee Airmen, the Tuskegee
experiment.
A way back with the syphilis, you know, and what happened there. And you have to list everything. And if it's not on there, you have to go to the institutional review board, and they will not approve it, you know, if you don't meet the standard. So we know that there is that safeguard
right
for people.
Right. And there's also all of us research as well. And that just really pushes for racial and ethnic minorities to be in clinical trials, you know, as well. And as well as the Patient-Centered Outcome Research Institute, you know, as well, because that's also part of the problem. Right. We develop these drugs, we develop, you know, vaccines, but we've had a study population that doesn't look like the rest of society. And so with COVID, you know, again, that was the one where I was like, okay. And it's because of that push.
I'm going to ask you a question. Why do you think this is so? You think it's still the hesitancy by the Black minority population to be using experiment going away back from Tuskegee?
I think it's Tuskegee. I think it's just the way that Black bodies are seen in this country. You know, we were brought here, you know, as property, right? Wasn't expected to be a full person, you know, as well. And that's why you have that legacy there. You have Tuskegee, you know, I'm a native Philadelphian. So I think about Holmesburg Prison, you know, as well. So people that are marginalized out of our societies, you know, they have no problems experimenting. You know, on us. So yes, definitely. I think that's a big part of the hesitancy. And it really, if you just look at structural racism, right? So it's in every area of our lives. And in some ways, you know, saying that I'm not getting the vaccine is a way to have control.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But how do we get them to the next level? Because we want to make sure that the vaccines are tested on people who look like us and we see the reaction in their body. We don't want to go take it without, you know, trials. How do we get them to volunteer to be in trials? Do you have any suggestion?
I think, as you said earlier, Vilma, it's, you know, just the facts, ma'am. Right? You're making sure people are educated about what really goes on for a trial, in a trial, right? All of the safeguards that are put in place. You know, the amount of work that you have to do to even be able to start working in a lab, people just don't understand that. You have to really build on the science. You have to write the papers. And then you actually have a group of your peers that review your work and ask the hard questions, right? And then you're making sure that you're not drawing conclusions that just aren't true. So I think understanding that scientific method, you know, understanding the processes of how we develop drugs and how you get drugs to market. And then, you know, the processes where you actually review drugs once they've been to market as well. So all of the reports that go to our state health departments for certain communicable diseases, all of the reactions that people have to drugs, that all gets reported. And then if the FDA, you know, sees that all of that has been reported, they call for a meeting to review that drug or that product. And so that's another piece that we have to think about, is how we vote as well, because our legislators, they allocate the funds, right? You saw what happened before this current administration with the old administration with the CDC.
Right.
And actually decimating the funding. And so now we're in a process of having to rebuild again. And I do believe if people understood, you know, everybody's concerned about that presidency, but we also need to be concerned about our local elections as well, because we're sending representatives to the federal government on our behalf. And so it's important that they vote in our best interest. But it's also incumbent on us to be educated consumers, you know, as well, and holding our elected officials to the feet to the fire. But we can't do that if we don't educate ourselves. What bills are going up? You know, what will impact your life, your day-to-day life, you know, as well? How active are you? Do you even know who your state representatives are? Do you know who your local officials are? Most people will don't know. And then they can't even find out how to find that information.
Yep, you are so right.
Be a good citizen. It's called being a good citizen.
Absolutely. So what is one thing you would like to leave our audience with? And if it has to do with prevention, you know, go ahead, because you work with community health. We say population health. The old term was community health. Or we still say community health, but it's synonymous if I say population health. Tell us a little bit. Let me see the time. Tell us a little bit about population health or community health, and then give our audience something to think about when at the end of this broadcast.
Along with a website or something where they can go to get information.
Maybe I could send that to you, but I think, you know, we talk about community health. It's just that it's activities that happen within the community to promote health, right? And to prevent diseases. So it's, you know, it's education, it's screenings, it's referral systems, we call it surveillance, right? So you're looking at systems. It's also coordination and collaborating. So, you know, working with partners as well. So it may be that, you know, as a nurse, I see, you know, an issue, and then it's helping people figure out, okay, how do I work within my means? You know, and within my life, and who do I connect with next to make sure that I get that continuity of care? You know, if we're talking about populations health, we're actually thinking about populations. So we have pockets of people within communities. So a population, you know, they have a shared characteristic. So it could be culture, it could be beliefs, it could be race, religion,
gender,
it could be a disease process or chronic illness, right? So you think about care in that aspect. And of course, public health, which I always say, if public health is truly working, you don't know it's working at all, right? So that's making sure that we have the proper sanitation systems, the hygiene, that we have food and healthy foods to eat, making sure that trash is collected, but then also information about vaccines, you know, health services. So I guess what I would like to leave your audience with is definitely prevention is always key. We may not be able to always stop being affected by illness, but how you recover depends on what you start with. So if you have a body that is depleted because you're not getting the proper nutrients, you don't have the proper hydration, you're not moving that body. We have joints, we have, you know, elbows, we have feet, we have these things because we're meant to move. These bodies are meant to move, you know, and it's hard to do that, I know, as I sat in front of a computer all day in our virtual worlds, but we have to be able to figure out how to be more flexible in our homes and, you know, get out there and walk. But we also need to go to sleep 6 to 8 hours a day, you know, and really thinking about, you know, and even you guys mentioned even earlier, the spiritual, right? So whatever that is, whatever your, you know, your belief system is, but having that as well. So it's a mind, body, spirit.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Really thank you.
Really good information. Now, is there, like I said earlier, is there like a site they should go to today? Is it the CDC or the
CDC
FDA site to get more information?
Absolutely. I would say cdc.gov. Is one site. Depending on your state, you have a state health department as well. So whatever their website is. So, I mean, it's just easy to just Google it, state health department or just COVID information. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the best resources because they update those resources all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's new information. And, you know, this is an unfolding you know, thing. It's like an unfolding case study how we use with our students. You know, but so is one way it's exciting, I think, because we're living through this pandemic, right? And I do believe we're going to see the other side of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do believe it is near.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the worst is behind us. Mm-hmm. But we have to get the herd immunity.
Yes.
Yeah. The way to do that is through vaccination,
getting more people to take the vaccine. Well said. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. That was good information. You have me thinking.
All right. Very good.
If I was 30% no, I would never take it. Now you may have me at 50%. I might may not take it.
He's a hard nut to crack.
It got me up to 50. So.
Okay. And listen, and that's what it's about. You know, you need to be comfortable with the decisions that you make.
Right.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
So much.
And for our listening audience, as you listen, please invite a friend or two to also listen to this broadcast because it's informative and it will dispel some myths that you have or you were exposed to. So you can find us on Facebook at Live Chat with Vivanville, and you can find us on YouTube, Live Chat with Vivanville. You can find us on Stitcher, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio, and you can also find us on GH Radio 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday. Yeah, Sunday through Monday. That's how they say. Anyway, we are out there. Just Google Live Chat with Viv and Bill. If you have questions, you can ask us on our Facebook page, or you can email us at livechatwithvivanville@gmail.com.
Well, thank you. This is another episode of Live Chat with Vivanville. Goodbye.